You're listening to episode 112 of the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast, where we're spending billions in a snap.
Episode 112 of the Frillo Bros Tech Podcast. Today is November the 17th, 2013. I am Matthew Dean Frillo, and this is my flammable brother, James Frillo.
Flammable?
Yeah, man. Catching Fire comes out Friday. I know you're not excited about it, but...
I know. No, I am excited. I do want to see it. My Fandango app has been acting up, and so I haven't been able to look at my movie list.
Oh yeah.
Figure out like what's next. I know it's a packed month and I'm pumped about it. That's next one. Friday. All right.
Yeah, Friday.
I will be driving to California. So I probably won't see it that weekend.
Yeah. Well, neither will I, cuz I'll be flying to our allies in the British Isles.
Yeah, awesome timing. I'm coming down to visit, and what do you do? Get out of there.
I know. Yeah, literally day for day when you're going to be here versus when I'm going to leave. Woo!
Classic.
Yeah. Not my greatest performance yet, but nonetheless, you know, it is what it is. We'll do another. You know what I'm most excited about this? Since there's not a lot to be excited about. I'll be broadcasting from England, and you'll be broadcasting from the closet. I'm kind of stoked.
That's right. I will be, won't I?
Yeah.
Lucky me.
The old soundstage, as it were.
Yeah, that's right. Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
But,
I like it. Cool.
Yeah. So, we got to talk about...
That's next week.
Yeah, that is next week, not this week. This week, like every week, we're going to be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. Man, that was a short pre-show, but that's because we got a packed regular show. But before we get into that, James has got a short disclosure that he's going to throw our way.
Yes, I have been using the Fitbit for a week, and I like it.
Man.
I've done an analysis between it and my cheapy pedometer. It's good. Mm. I will do a write-up on it. Actually, it's not that much. Basically, when you're running or doing active stuff, they are within each other. I went on like a 3-mile run, and they were within 100 steps of each other.
Not bad.
You know, that's margin of error. Cool. Awesome. Where they differ significantly is when you're not active, like just sitting around or milling around, you know, that kind of stuff. The cheapy one tends to count a lot more of those steps. You know, bouncing on a ball, that would count as a step. The Fitbit doesn't
count.
Yeah, dude.
Fitbit is brutal about, like, you have got to be moving. Like, it doesn't even – just the shaking. For future reference, if you want to cheat it, steps because you're, you know, 10 short of your 25,000.
Yeah.
You're so tired you can't take another step. It's an arc forward motion. We'll get you the step. It took me a while to figure it out, but I got it.
Nice.
At least
nice.
You want to show and go like, that's how we got all the steps. No, I got them legitimately.
I got them legit. We're just talking about the last 10.
Exactly.
Yeah, so no, it's good. It's been good. I like it. I've been counting calories and water and sleep, and it's good. Apparently I didn't sleep well last night. But, you know, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
My other disclosure is that, and that's half the battle, is that I work for HP. However, I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
It's a good thing you remember to do that, because I had completely forgotten you were supposed to. I mean, like, it was written down in front of me, and I'd forgotten.
No problem.
Just let us go on. If you want to follow us throughout the week, we do all sorts of entertaining things on the Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Actually, this is like a really bad week for me. I'm not sure I posted anything.
I didn't do anything this week.
Yeah, this is a bad week for. I got to change that tonight.
It was a heads down, get work done type of week.
Heck yeah. But if you want to follow me, because I promise this week, and especially the week after that, I'll be posting pictures of snow, I'm sure. Or at least, you know, drizzle misery from England. If you want to follow me, my Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow, and my Instagram is NextWiggin4, like the Ender's Game character.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
His last name is Ender. Wiggin.
I was going to say, it's not Ender.
Oh, boy. I am jamesfurlow.com, at jamesfurlow. Essentially, just search for that, and you'll see everything.
Cool. Google it.
You'll get a kick out of this. Google was doing a promotion to promote their Google Plus stuff way back in the day. And you could actually sign up, and I did this. I don't know if I could find them too soon, but you could order business cards from Google that essentially it said Google with the search bar underneath and your name typed into it.
Nice.
And then like the search feeling lucky, and they're like, order these business cards, and I did, and they gave me like 200 of them.
Nice. That's cool. Did you hand them out to people? Google it.
I think I did a couple times, and they're like, what is this? I was like, yeah, that's right. Just search me.
Did you ever watch 30 Rock?
I've a couple episodes.
Oh. It's like, I never watched it, but the one scene that I always remember from watching clips of is Tracy Morgan asking Tina Fey if he can Google himself in her office. Which, yeah, it's a dirty show. Don't watch it. Never mind. anyways, technology. This is exciting. This is where the wheat has been separated from the chaff. Where in this case, the wheat is graphene and carbon nanotubes are the chaff.
I thought carbon nanotubes were the future.
Everybody thinks they're like super cool in the future.
Yeah.
And the problem is that nobody can figure out what to make with them. Or how to manufacture. Sorry. Everybody can figure out all sorts of cool things to make with them, but nobody can figure out how to do it at a scale that's like actually usable. It's like, we can make batteries that are a bazillion times better than any battery that's ever been charged before. And they're like, cool. You know, like, show it to me. And then they show you this tiny little like cell that gets like 0.1 volt, but it does it more efficiently than any other battery out there. You know, like, that's not what we were hoping for.
Fantastic.
You know, we're hoping for like a car battery. Well, graphene has really, as the new super material, has really kind of separated itself. And one of the new in that it's manufacturable. So there's a group of Korean engineers. And they're saying that graphene superconductors are ready for electric vehicle energy storage. Basically, they've sat down and they said, yeah, they're using graphene and a couple other different technologies to build their dielectrics. For those of you that don't know how capacitors work, you basically take two plates together, you build up a charge on one side, like negative electrons, and then it, you know, ends up with a surplus of protons on the other side. And when you can, you know, and you can drive them that way, and the electrons and protons will hold each other through that gap that they call the dielectric. And then when you connect something to the two plates, charge will flow from one to the other. So it acts like a small battery. It acts like a storage for electricity, potential energy. Stores potential energy in the form of electrical energy, which is cool. So that's basically what a battery does, but it does it through a chemical process as opposed to a physical process. Well, the thing is that with capacitors, the tighter that you can pack the plates together, the higher the capacitance. And so they'll put like a really thin material in there that won't allow electricity to go through it. But you also want to get the plates really small so you can get as much surface area as possible. And using graphene and a dopant that they kind of put in there to make it even lighter, they've figured out how to make these super crazy high capacity capacitors. And what's cool about that is that the energy density of these capacitors is on par with lithium-ion batteries. And it's really good. It's a big step. Ideally, you'd actually, you know, get a lot better than lithium-ion batteries, because this isn't a silver bullet, unfortunately. But they do charge and, like, completely charge in 16 seconds. So where Elon Musk's Tesla will take like an hour and a half to charge completely, I think it is, or maybe it's just an hour. I don't want to get sued for saying something wrong against my hero. They take a little bit of time to charge, whereas these guys will charge in 16 seconds. And one of the big deals there is that it's that the amount of electricity that's generated through regenerative braking, so as you're hitting your brakes, and it's charging the battery, like with it's the same technology that goes into hybrid cars. The problem is that you actually still lose a lot of energy to heat through braking, because the batteries can't charge fast enough. They can't keep up with the amount of electricity that's being generated through the braking function, so it's just wasted energy. Whereas with this, they charge so fast that you basically can't brake fast enough. All energy generated through braking is capturable, which is very cool.
Nice.
And the other thing that this is a big deal is that it's cycle time, or it's number of cycles is huge. A lot of times really, really super high capacity, capacitors, everything's so thin and small that they break down relatively quickly. It's one of the big trade-offs with high capacity capacitors. They can do a full charge in 16 seconds, and they've repeated it 10,000 times without a significant reduction in capacitance, which is a
cool.
Big deal. That's when you're getting into, like prime time. So now if you don't know anything about capacitors and how they work electronically, you might be asking yourself, so if it's got the battery density, if it's got the energy density of a lithium-ion battery, it can recharge as many times, if not more, than a lithium-ion battery. It charges faster, and it uses graphene, which is just carbon, so it's going to be relatively affordable to manufacture because it's not a rare earth element. What's the real drawback here? Why aren't we doing that? And the problem is, comes from a really cool effect of lithium-ion batteries, in that they deliver a really, really, really consistent voltage. With almost no concern for how much electricity is left in them. So if they're at 100% charge, they deliver 2.2 volts in per cell. If they're at 10% charge, they deliver like 1.9 volts, almost the same. And so what you do is you stack all those together, you put them in parallel, and you can build up these huge electrical charges that you need to drive the car. The problem with a capacitor is that they're perfectly linear. So at 100% charge, like let's say it has a 10,000 volt charge, at 100% it can deliver 10,000 volts. At 50% it can deliver 5,000 volts, and at 10% it can deliver 1,000 volts. And so in order to actually deliver a consistent voltage like you would require with a car, you need a couple of pieces of circuitry that regulate and normalize that voltage. That's really inefficient to do. We're getting a lot better at it, but it's still a pretty inefficient process, and especially on the low end. So the high end, what you can do is you can do like switching power supplies, like you can with like laptop chargers and stuff, computer chargers. Those are relatively efficient at lowering the voltage without wasting a lot of energy. But it's once you get kind of below that, where you have to start jumping the voltage up, that's when you start getting your real inefficiencies. And overall, they say they're about, like, if I'm pulling this off the top of my head, and it's the last time I read, that when you put a capacitor of equal energy density to a battery with all the proper circuitry, you're only going to get like 60% of the battery efficiency, actual usable electricity out of it, which is a pretty big hit. But if you use this stuff in series with like the recuperative braking and stuff, and you just start building dual powertrains where the capacitors are doing some of the heavy lifting, the battery is doing a lot of the normalizing, you can start to build more efficient ways of doing the exact same thing. So it's exciting. It's good news. It's not a perfect replacement, but hopefully Senor Musk will incorporate this kind of stuff into his next generation of electric vehicles, which we'll talk about later. And we'll get even better electric cars. Pretty exciting.
That is exciting. That is exciting. Something else that's exciting, and I actually think that it's been, I think we've talked about something similar to this before, or at least they have existed before. But there's a new company out there from Y Combinator called Coin that has created it's essentially a credit card or a card that can hold multiple cards, up to 8 cards on it.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so essentially that you buy it and it comes with this little dongle that you plug into the phone, you swipe your card and it gets all the information off the barcode, and then you take a picture of it, and it gets all the other information off of it, and with this app that they have, and then you just sync the app with this card, and then it's got a little button on it, and you just tell it which, it'll cycle through the cards, and you are a credit card, and when you swipe it, according to the machine, it will be your credit card.
That is cool.
And then you go to the bank, you go, okay, time to switch it up to the ATM card, put it into the ATM machine. As far as it's concerned, it is your ATM card.
So you don't have to carry those other cards around with you, correct?
Correct. You go to Safeway and it asks for your Safeway loyalty card, switch over to that one, swipe. As far as it's concerned, it's your loyalty card. Nice. And then switch over to your credit card, swipe, and pay with the exact same card. Yeah, so the advantage, obviously, is you don't have to carry a lot of credit cards around with you. The app can hold an unlimited amount, but the card can only have saved 8 at a time on it. And so, come on.
Yeah.
It's more than 8. And then, so that's cool. But then the other thing that's pretty neat about it, is there's obviously security concerns. And so it does connect to your phone, as I talked about syncing. And if it uses, Bluetooth low energy stuff, if it goes below or if it goes away from your phone for a certain amount of time, it will just lock up. It'll stop working. And so it's kind of a dual authentication.
So the one thing that I could find being absurdly annoying about this thing, because it sounds really cool, is how long does the battery on this thing last? Because
So what's interesting about this, the battery lasts 2 years.
Ooh,
and once it runs out, you're done. You got to buy another one.
Well, I'm all right with that. I mean, because I was going to say, if I have to remember to charge my it's bad enough that I have to remember to put money into my bank account. If I have to remember to put power into it too, I'm not going to buy anything. I'm going to starve to death. That's cool. That's very cool. Are you getting one?
The card costs $100 unless you pre-order it, which you could do right now for $50.
Oh.
And, so if you think about it, they say the battery is supposed to last 2 years, which means the card essentially will cost you $50 a year on average to have the privilege of only having one card in your pocket. And so, there's kind of obviously over time they'll come up with better versions and stuff. Like I said, I think there's another one out there that does it, a similar deal. But I wouldn't mind one because I carry 3 cards, and I actually should carry 4. I really only want to carry 1.
if you don't mind me asking on a live broadcast, what do you carry?
Yeah, so I've got a credit card that I use for all of my main spending stuff, and then I've got a card for real estate stuff. So like when I go to Home Depot, I'll buy it off of that because I've got a separate account for all of that stuff. And then I have another business because I, you know, can't just have one. You've got to have multiple. That also requires a card. And so I don't know why I carry that one around all the time with me. That one I could probably get away with a lot less. And so, which I might do.
So,
and then the one that I should carry around is just the debit card that goes to my main account, because Winco doesn't accept credit cards. So every once in a while I find myself like, I'll be at Winco, you know, shopping and go, oh, wait, how am I going to pay for this? And and so what I ended up doing is I use my real estate account because that's a debit card, and then literally while walking out the door, transfer money back over from my main one and just go, ah, that was lame.
What was I going to say? I saw this thing and I was like, oh, I'm totally getting this. This is awesome. I can't justify it, but I'll find a way to justify it. This is so cool. And then I like actually thought about it for like a minute or two, and I realized I only carry my debit card.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I've got my debit card and my license. My Safeway card is, I use the number. My phone number, I think in my card right now I have, let's see here. I'll do the demonstration for you. I've got my personal debit card. I've got a Starbucks gift card that I got for Christmas last year, and it's almost dead.
Which you should just upload that to your phone, man.
I know, right? App. And then I have a Lids Club card, which gets me 15% off, but it's not a magnetic strip card, so it wouldn't do any good to have it anyways. So it's like I've got no reason, literally got no reason to get it. Or it's because I've already doing what it wants me to do. Only got one card. Now if it could replace my driver's license too, that would be really cool. But somehow I think the California state government would not be a big fan of that.
I'm similar. I've got my license, those three cards, my insurance card, and then a couple business cards. That's it.
Yeah. You say, I hold on.
Oh, and my annual goals. I carry those around in my wallet too.
Your annual goals, nice. I got too many business cards. I got a Tesla business card because I'm a dork. I've got 50 pesos.
It's not yours. It's just okay. Nice.
No, yeah, that's not mine. You know what it is?
How big is your wallet, man? Look at all the stuff you got in it.
I guess it's just one of these like bifolds.
Okay, that's what I got.
And then this is mine.
Which mine was actually at the center of a wallet, and then I just took it out and
We have the exact same wallet. Like,
nice.
Are we actually? I think our female counterparts bought it for us from the same place. Then I got Mace. Yeah. No, I think Mace is out. I don't actually remember. But yeah, I just realized that it's so cool, but it's like it would literally be a complete waste of money. I mean, it couldn't be a bigger waste of money for me because I would store one card, and I'd have to go and find other cards to justify getting it, which seems like a really bad idea. Were really bad reason to get extra cards. Why are you applying for so many credit cards? Don't you already have three? Well, I'm trying to justify the $100 that I spent on this.
Yeah, I got to get to 8.
Exactly. And it's funny. I actually remember thinking like probably 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, I was like, man, you know what would be really cool? Is if they made these cards, if they made like a coin, that like a single coin that was like scalable, like an electronic coin. And so like you could like adjust how many pennies were on it so that you could just like give out coins. Like, I don't even know how you do that, but it would be really cool. Like you could like give exact change so you wouldn't have to carry change around anymore. And I remember like thinking like this is great and like working through all the like different – you know, how would you do this? And then I think it was somebody else who finally said, maybe you could just make it like a credit card size. Yeah. Oh. I see what you mean. I reinvented the credit card. Dang it.
It was a good idea, indeed.
Yes. I'm glad somebody else came up with it. Yeah, so that's cool. That's very cool. I love projects like that, even if they're not useful for me.
Yeah, and I think you effectively talked me out of it too, which is
bummer.
What I wasn't hoping for, but that's all right. It's okay. I'll save the $50. Well, and the thing that I could see that would get weird is, you know, you do go somewhere and you swipe it, and the checkout person's just like, "Whoa, time's out."
Yeah.
That's not a credit card. Sorry. Yeah.
What is this?
And you're like, no, it really is.
Just trust me.
And what do? You show them the app that has a picture of it? I don't know. I mean, I'd be all like, "That's awesome."
Yeah. It's kind of like when the TSA, like when they first introduced the iPads and the MacBook Air. They're like, "This isn't a laptop. Trust me. It's a laptop."
Yeah.
And sometimes you just, and the other thing is, I still think that, you know, we all carry around the future of how we're going to do, you know, finances in our pockets, whether it's a, you know, NFC with Android or Bluetooth with Apple, or, you know, some combination of both. I think that, you know, the reality of it is that it's a good thing that the battery only lasts 2 years, because in 2 years there'll probably be a dominant competing model out there, and that'll be changing the way we do, you know, our personal finance, you know, currency exchange, making sure that the NSA can track absolutely every, as though they can't track it already. Like, let's be real.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool. I think the coolest part about it is, what I like about it most is that it's a really sophisticated piece of technology that's as thin as a credit card. That, to me, is the most promising part about it. I wish there was an application that made more sense for me and made more sense on a broader scale, and I think there is, but I just don't know what it is off the top of my head. But I think what you're seeing is you're starting to see the miniaturization at a price point that's not crazy. You know, and at some point, you know, it's essentially a Bluetooth, you know, it's a sophisticated little thing for $100.
Totally.
You know, and they're, and I'm sure they're not selling it for $50 at a loss. That might just be their, you know, that might be cost, but,
well, they were saying that they were like, I wouldn't get it until summer of 2014.
Yeah.
So I had to wait a while, but they were like, "But we're going to charge you right away."
Yeah.
And they were saying, you know, that's for manufacturing reasons, so we can, you know, get the capital up to actually make the thing. Whereas, like with my Lockatron, they said they're not going to charge me that one until it ships, which is coming in December. I've got the app downloaded and put in a prime spot. I'm just waiting.
Effectively, what you're doing is you're doing a that's cool. Effectively, they're doing a Kickstarter project without the Kickstarter. You know?
Yeah,
it's the same principle, which I'm okay with. You just have to know what you're getting yourself into, you know. And, you know, obviously, I'm okay with it. I've got like 4 Kickstarter gadgets just sitting on my desk. You know, like I've got a problem about it.
So it's cool. I liked it. I was trying to justify it, and you've successfully talked me out of it, which is a shame.
Sorry. That's all right. There are other.
I was on the ride home though. I was like, "Man, you know what I really want? It's like, I just want an iPad." Just keep coming back to that one.
Dude, I keep this week I'm finally I took your advice. I put money aside, and I was going to probably wait till December, but now I have a solid 30 hours of airplane flight coming up in front of me. I'm getting Pokemon. I've decided I'm getting it on Thursday, so I don't start playing it until I'm on the plane.
Very cool. I'm going to skip ahead here, cuz it just makes sense.
Go for it.
There was something else that came out this last week in the gaming world.
Yeah. What was that?
Have you gotten your hands on it yet?
Uh-huh.
I'll give you a clue. Its dominant number is 4.
Oh, baby. The Xbox 4.
Yeah, there was a fun Onion article.
Yeah.
They made a table comparing Xbox One to PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
And it's just, I probably couldn't find it fast enough, but it just totally goofy. I'm going to do it anyways.
I'll do it. You go for.
All right. Yeah, it's pretty goofy what they do. But one of them is related to numbers. So this article is not even close. What did I tap on? Oh, man, something different. It's great. PlayStation 4 came out, and I actually, believe it or not, had an opportunity to play with it.
You got to play with the PlayStation 4?
I know.
Who? Oh, I
got important. I got friends in the right places. I got to play with it on Friday, which I think is the day it actually came out, because I was doing a little D&D, and it showed up in the middle of that, and so we hooked it up and we played, and it looks awesome. You know, graphics look cool. The hardware looks very slick. The controller feels good. You look like you found that table.
I did. Want me to do it? Want me to read it?
Oh, yeah. Make it happen.
So this is the features list. It's going to be the PS4 first and then the Xbox One. So the color of the console, PS4, Midnight Gleam. Xbox One, Onyx Void.
Yes.
Length of controller cable. The PlayStation 4, only 400 feet. Xbox One, 450 feet.
That's right.
Chewable wires, PlayStation 4, yes. Xbox One, no. Number most closely associated with the console. PlayStation 4, 4. Xbox One, 1.
Yeah,
buttons that makes characters... buttons that makes on-screen characters go to the left. Both consoles, yes.
yep.
Price. PlayStation... $400. Are you kidding me? Out of the question, Connor. I don't care how much you want it. Xbox. This is even worse. What's wrong with the one you have? That one works fine. Graphics processor, 1.84 teraflops, AMD Next Generation Radeon. Xbox, army of intelligent super fast ants that crawl through the wires into your TV and quickly paint the gameplay with little paintbrushes.
Makes sense to me.
That's all, man.
That's funny. I love the Onion. They're pretty goofy. What they should have had on there on the table, though, was, you know, game worth buying at launch. Just a no for both.
Yeah.
Well, everything that I've...
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, everything that I've read, the reviews are like, it's an awesome piece of hardware. They're like, it's slick. Obviously, it seems to be having some sort of wobble issue, which they'll solve, I'm sure. But... they're like, you know, with Sony, like, it's an awesome piece of hardware. The controller is significantly better than previous generations. They nailed it this time around. Everyone is raving about it. They said it, but, and Sony has clearly said that this is a gaming machine. And the only problem is that it's not launching with any good games. And so they're like, that's an issue.
So Tyler Perry, David Perry, different person.
Mr. Man, you happen to have it.
That's why I was like, you know, it's not important, but I figured it was him. He was the one who I thought really changed, like, it was like, in retrospect, it's super obvious, but it hadn't even occurred to me until he pointed out on the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast that the whole idea is that these super great games, the games that sell systems, take years to develop. The SDK for these systems, I mean, they'll take 3 years to develop, right? Really great game. And so the SDK for these systems didn't come out 3 years ago. It didn't come out until like this last year.
We should tell them something.
Yeah, which means that in order to develop a launch title that's really a next generation, you know, quality game, you're gonna have to be working on the premise that you're gonna be able to take advantage of, you know, like guessing what's gonna come, and then, you know, unless you're working directly with the guys writing the OS, with the SDK, with the different, you know, you're helping develop the SDK for specific games, which doesn't really make sense to you. You're basically going to launch a game that doesn't take advantage of it. And even if you do, I mean, the optimization to actually take full advantage of the hardware you know, really takes time to develop the proper techniques and everything.
Makes sense.
And his point was, and I thought this was really great, was the you know, games like Call of Duty and Halo and Gran Turismo and, you know, Solid Snake, what's that one? Metal Gear Solid. Games like those, games that have historically moved systems, mm-hmm. are so expensive to develop. Have, you know, Grand Theft Auto, they take so long to develop that they're really going to try to maximize the number of consoles that they are, you know, available on. They're literally...
They're literally nothing. Hopefully he'll be back in just a little bit here. I was getting super excited to hear what he had to say about the PlayStation 4. Let's see here. Enhance, what does that mean? Well, All right. Well, while he is figuring out what's going on, let's see here. We'll change topics real quick. Dropbox has come out with some new numbers. Number one, they now have 200 million users, which is pretty cool. Good job, Team Dropbox. And then the other thing that I think is actually pretty cool is they've unveiled a new for business client combo, which is pretty sweet. They were saying that they're having problems where people, you know, they have a Dropbox for business and then one for their personal stuff, and they would just put everything in together in one, which wasn't necessarily the right way to do it. And so they figured out a way to do it so where now if you sign up for business and you also have a personal account, you'll actually have like two Dropboxes show up in your menu, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, that is really
job,
interesting.
Dropbox. Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened there, man. That was super weird. Just
you're in the middle, dude. You had both arms up. You were going to make a point.
I think what my point was is that they're trying to when they're developing these games, you know, they want to put them on as many systems as possible, sell as many titles as possible so that they can become, you know, they can sell $1 billion worth of games on day one, which is why Grand Theft Auto launched for Xbox and PlayStation 3, Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, and is forward compatible with Xbox One and PlayStation 4, because the goal is to put it on as many consoles so there's no reason to upgrade. Which is an interesting, like, it comes to this new dynamic strategy of, like, really and truly, you know, why do you need a new system? You know, what's the point of upgrading this generation? Really and truly, there's not going to be – I don't think you're going to see the crazy high spike in sales for a couple of years until you really get compelling games that are platform-dependent. They're only on one system, which Xbox has got –
like to- Yeah, it's almost like you would expect it to get kind of like computers and operating systems. And we'll use Windows as an example, I suppose, where it's like, yeah, over time, they can continue to improve the hardware and make it better and faster. There's not necessarily a reason to announce a new console other than maybe like how Apple does it, right? Hey, we updated the Mac line.
Right.
You know, it's better, faster, awesome, or whatever. You know, you should go out and buy it. And then every once in a while, they do software updates as well. And eventually, like, sorry, old system guys, you don't get this new software update. And, you know, in the games going forward, you know, very much like iOS or even Android, we're like, yeah, we support Sony PlayStation 4.2, you know, and beyond. And so, you know, when they come out with the PS5, it's not really the 5. It's just a little bit better hardware, a little bit better software. And, you know, I almost treat it like the computer ecosystems do.
I hope that the Valve Steam Box really kind of changes how they look at how it allows, because I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that one of the reasons why they stick with the whole we're coming out with a new generation, we're doing a big platform, we're launching games, is not because there's necessarily any like huge advantage. there are advantages to what they're doing, because what it essentially does is it makes sure that all the hardware is the same. They're doing what Apple does with the iPhone, where you know that there's a standard screen resolution with your iPhone. You know that there's standard hardware, so you can really crazy optimize for a single piece of hardware. It prevents fragmentation, which allows investors to drop tons and tons of money into these games because they know that the ROI is going to be huge because they know that there's a huge user base that can use them. And so they can squeeze more performance out of hardware than they could ever squeeze out of a computer. And so that, on one hand, you've got these two competing systems, and it's like obviously Apple's figured out how to kind of make that slow progression work, where they control the hardware, they control the software, and they just kind of move everything forward all the time. And I think that's the best route for like your PlayStations and Xboxes to go forward. But I think that the Steam boxes are going to be a little more the Wild West Android style, everybody competing, just everybody getting crazy, building the best system with the best software. Valve's going to keep, pumping out their best version of the software. Third parties are going to come in and adopt it and adapt it and try to make it better and put plugins, and hardware guys are going to do their thing. And it's just going to be this wild ride of like, does the game work? I don't know. Maybe. Let's try it, and more akin to what your Windows PCs are doing, I think, except even a little bit crazier, which might be the death knell of the ecosystem. But I hope that what happens is with the direction that Apple takes hardware and software, and juxtapose that to just the wild, crazy high speed development that's going to come out of the Steam box ecosystem, it's going to force PlayStation and Xbox to culturally change what it means to launch a new system, which I think would be good for the industry as a whole, and it'll be cool. I think it'll be really cool. I think you'll get, some really, I think over time you'll get more affordable systems, which will be good because these are crazy expensive, and, better performance and more competition, better development. So, good all around.
So you didn't go out and buy one? Is that what I'm
gathering? I did not. I thought about it and decided not to. I actually wouldn't get the PlayStation.
Instead.
I wouldn't get the number one, if I were gonna do this, I'd go as expensive as possible. I'd get the X-Bone. But I don't play video games. Like, really, I try, like, really hard to play video games. And I don't play video games enough. It wouldn't make sense to me. If I lived in a house with four other guys, I would throw in $100 or even $200 and split the system with somebody. That would make sense for me. It's kind of a communal, we're all going to do this together. But alone, my current situation, it does not make sense at all, but they're cool. I want one because they're cool. I want one for the same reason I want a coin.
Yeah, not really, huh? Ah, another one we can't justify. Kills me.
I know.
What kind of...
I wish I were a lot richer so that I didn't have to justify it. I could just go out and buy it.
Yeah, the irony of that is that's why you would be rich. Is you figured out how to say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well.
I wish I was wildly rich.
Something amazing, then it doesn't,
Like Snapchat, which Facebook tried to buy for $3 billion, and the 24-year-old, 23-year-old said, no, I'm gonna hold off.
So the question is he in... So it's I read this really cool article that was talking about it from Facebook's perspective, actually.
Yeah.
Where it was comparing, It was comparing, thank you, Instagram and YouTube. And by the way, someone asked a question: why the Xbox over the PlayStation for you?
Oh,
which I got on my Pebble. Just thought you should know that. Do you want to answer that real quick?
Honestly, it's just because it's my I have way more friends that are on Xbox Live than PlayStation Network, and I know that over time the expectation that everybody has is that they're going to continue with the Xbox ecosystem, they're going to continue with their Xbox Live account, and 90% of my gaming is social gaming, so if I were to justify it, that's how I would justify it. I think, yeah. That's it. That's the long and short of it. More friends use it. I know.
That's a good reason. That's why Facebook is as big as it is, and why they were interested in Snapchat. But before we even get to that, there was this cool article by Benedict Evans. I don't know who that is, but he was comparing Instagram to YouTube, and he goes, "Look at this. At first blush, he goes, because that's what a lot of the comparisons were when Facebook." When Facebook bought Instagram, it was like, oh, it's like when Google bought YouTube. And he goes, when you first look at it, both graphs in terms of users just, you know, up and to the right, hockey stick type growth. He's like, yeah, they look cool. He goes, but there's actually a huge, huge fundamental difference here. He said, YouTube is and was the dominant online video sharing platform.
Right.
He's like, you know, it made sense for Google to buy them and to have kind of competing products and, you know, kind of feel it out and integrate them and, you know, do what they're doing. And when Instagram, on the other hand, is not actually. They said that, the latest disclosure was that 55 million photos were shared, that's a day, on Instagram. But another 350 million were shared on Facebook itself, but also 350 million a day are also shared on Snapchat and 400 million on WhatsApp. And they go, and there's other ones like Line and WeChat.
Snapchat had the same number of photos shared on it a day as Facebook?
Yeah.
I didn't know
so
that.
So their whole... Yeah, so his thing is like, you know, at the time, oh my gosh, they bought Instagram, it's huge, it's amazing, but they went, Facebook didn't actually buy the big one in the group. And so, you know, it was like when Google bought, fair enough, by the way, with your friends, again.
Thank you.
When Google bought YouTube, you know, it was like, okay, game over, right? You know, yeah. We win. They were done. And it's just like Facebook, they thought they had that with Instagram. Yeah, it turns out they didn't. And yeah. So that is partially, from my opinion, that's what we're seeing from Facebook's perspective going, oh, man, we spent a billion dollars. We got to keep going. We haven't cornered the market yet like Google has done with YouTube. And so that's why they're looking for Snapchat. And throwing around funny money, really, if you think about it. Can you imagine the Instagram guys be like, what? They got 3 billion?
Yeah. The team of 12 dudes on Instagram. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure they'll console themselves with, you know, with anything that they could possibly imagine with their third of a billion dollars that they – you know, have, jeez,
yeah,
of Facebook stock, more importantly, which, by the way, is worth more today than when they were bought. You know, it's worked out in the long run.
Yeah, I don't feel bad for them at all. But it's just, it's interesting. So, again, that's Facebook's perspective, and I totally get why they would make a play for him. And
a play? You know, that was a...
What?
I don't even know what – that's more than a play. That's a play for it sounds like it's some sort of strategy. That was like a nuclear bomb of we're going to win this, 3 bill, boom, you know. Drop the mic, walk away, it feels over.
But as you pointed out, it's not exactly what happened. What's up with this 23-year-old founder, or did I just give the answer?
I think he's a 23-year-old founder, yeah.
So here's the question, right? You know, there was a time when Facebook was getting offered crazy money, and they were you know, and Zuckerberg was like, nope, not going to take it. And everyone was like, what? You're crazy. And they all used MySpace as the example, right, where they sold right at the peak before falling down. And they were like, just wait for it. Just wait for it. Facebook's missing out. And I will admit that I was even in that group where I was like, Facebook's an idiot, man. They, you know, they should have sold out a long time ago. And, you know, or at least take the next offer type thing, which is why I never get on to Deal or No Deal, because I'm out so fast. I'm no fun.
The deal is $32,000. You've only answered two, or, you know, you've only gotten two suitcases. Will you take it? You're going to give me $32,000. Yeah, I'll take it. Let's do that. It's the deal.
I'm out. And the crowd's just crazy in the background. I'm like, nope, trust me.
Yeah,
I'm good.
This is $32,000 I wouldn't otherwise have, guys. This is a good deal.
Yeah, I'm done. I would have walked for $2,000. I'll be honest. Yeah, that's how bad I am. So, you know, so which is probably – I'm probably not the right person to talk about this either, because I'm like, $3 billion? Yeah, I'm out for a business model that you know, doesn't make any money yet, which, you know, I get. It's not necessarily about that. And we've talked about how if you make money, that's actually bad for you because now they know how much you're worth.
Right.
And whereas at least at this stage, it's all guessing.
And I thought your point last week, you know, because I was like, how would you make money off of it? You know, what would you do? But you're sort of your idea of like injecting ads, you know, and being able to see how long people hold on to it, you know, they're never going to be more than 10-second ads. It's actually a decent ad model, you know, and I don't know. I shrug my shoulders and I go, yeah, I could see it. I could see it. I could see how, you know, I have a bigger.
Here's my guess. Have you been following their the lawsuit that's been going on with them at all?
No, not at all. I wasn't even aware of it.
I don't even know if I – yeah, we must not have talked about this on this. So I'll try to give it a quickish history. Apparently, three guys started Snapchat. And it was going. It started to take off. And somewhere in there, two of the guys were like, oh, you third person, you're not actually a founder. He was like – he did like the marketing type stuff, you know. He made the logo for them. Well – he came up with the ghost logo idea. And then the – okay, so let's see. We got person one, two, and three, okay?
Okay.
So person three was that marketer dude came up with the logo. Person two was the computer design person. And so he actually drew it in the computer with person number three, you know, directing him, stuff like that. So long story short, they're coming down to like – you know, oh, this is starting to take off, and they're talking about, you know, money and stuff. And they're just like, oh, yeah, person number three, you're not actually part of the company. You're not a founder. You had nothing to, you know, you're not eligible for anything. To which he was like, yeah, I kind of was here from the beginning. They're like, no, you never did anything of material, you know, whatever. And you weren't even part of the company to begin with. To which he was like, what in the world are you talking about? I was part of it. Well, it turns out that persons one and two started a company together that kind of never went anywhere. And so when it came time to Snapchat, they just kind of made Snapchat a part of this old company.
Huh.
You know, don't even think subsidiary. It was just they just used that account, essentially.
Right.
And so that was the parent company. And so... So person number three was never a part of – he didn't even know them when this other one was started. And so they're playing the technical game of, well, see, he wasn't here when the company started. He was just a non-paid employee. And they even went as far – and I think this is where they're going to get themselves in trouble. Like he wasn't even a part of it. He didn't even help.
Yeah.
To which he's got tons of records. And he's like, no. I was there.
Right.
And, you know, so it's super interesting. But the whole point of it is it really – and they were talking about – and they – whoever was doing it, probably TechCrunch or Pando Daily, one of the two, you know, had emails back and forth. And, I mean, these guys, total slang and cussing and – you know what I mean? Just like you feel like – I'm going to do it. Like you're reading the emails of a high school football player where you're just like – come on, you know, that level of maturity. And then they said once you know, lawsuits started being thrown around, all of a sudden super formal language, you know, occurred, and you're like, yeah, lawyer wrote this. I can tell. They're no longer allowed to write emails for good reason. And so all that to say, you know, besides, it will never destroy the company, and I'm sure what will happen is something like, you know, with Zuckerberg, where eventually when they go public, this guy, he'll get a few $1,000,000 and he'll be upset, but deal with it, you know, like the, you know, like in the Facebook deal, and they're like, you just move on with your life and be awesome. But there's a little part of me that's like, man, those emails are super revealing of where those guys are at. And if they think that they can just, I totally think I lost you again, but that's okay. If they think that they can just run the company all by themselves without getting any help from an outsider or someone more mature to help them, you know, do this business, they're going to be in trouble, which was what would be nice if they got, if they sold, because then they would have that, you know, even if it is Zuckerberg, he's clearly proven he knows how to run a company. They would then have that older, more mature person to come along aside and say, okay, here's how to grow. Here's how to make your business bigger. And if they don't have that, I honestly don't know if they're going to make it. But you have no comment to that, but that's all right.
It's Google services are my problem. Keeps just kicking me off.
Are you like it makes you it logs you out or
no? It's just like nothing Google will connect on my computer. Everything else is working. Internet's working fine. I can go anywhere. I can do speed tests, but I can't go to any Google services. Can't go to Gmail. Will close. Google.
Well, if you need to Google switch over to your iPad, that you know maybe that will work better or something. I don't know, but
yeah. Let me give me 1 second.
Make it happen. Technical break. Technical break. Here, oh no, I'll play a song.
We'll have that as a backup. Because it's gonna get weird if I don't do that. As I'm thinking about, So
do you think Snapchat's gonna like, you know? Do you think they're they're gonna be around for a while, or is it a fad?
So is the long and short of your argument that I just so I don't miss out because I think this was interesting was that basically the lawsuit is what's preventing them from selling right now?
No. The point of it was when you read all the emails and stuff, it's very clear that these guys are young and immature and I think that they need to sell or at least bring on somebody who is more mature. I can help them make smart decisions. Not necessarily, you know, say they need a, I'm not saying they need a revenue model. I'm just saying they are clearly making decisions that are not necessarily the best for their users or for the future of their company by doing these petty types of things. But
I'll go back to what I always go back to, and I might be wrong about this in the long run, but I'm so far I think this has been relatively true. The guys on top at Google, the guys on top at Facebook, care desperately about really, really cool server-side technology. They're tech guys, they're big data guys, they're numbers guys. They almost don't the experience that they're trying to deliver is almost secondary to building cool technology. I mean, and that's incredibly clear at Google because they just go and try all sorts of different services and everything and throw everything against the wall. And Facebook's got a really diverse network of really impressive technology that they build as well. And they've got an incredibly compelling product. You do those two things, you basically give really smart guys with really great engineering and product development, you know, eyes. You give those guys a lot of money, and they go and do other cool things, and they keep making money, they keep finding new revenue streams. What did Elon Musk do? What did, you know, Apple do? What did Microsoft do? You give guys that can, you know, they developed one good product, made them a bunch of money, and then they go on and build the next new product. And sometimes all of these new products are all, you know, in Facebook's case, everything is under the Facebook domain. Google, everything is under the Google domain. You know, Elon Musk, he's got four, you know, he's got two major companies he's working on right now that are both, you know, doing cool new stuff. You know, and it's like, you know, it depends on where they go. My gut instinct with or right now with Snapchat, my gut is they're getting lucky. If you look at the difference in quality of what Instagram was day one versus what Snapchat was and kind of how it delivers, and you know, it's stupid stuff. It's the small details, like the idea that your pictures are deleted from your iPhone when they're clearly not at all. All they did was they take the photo and they just change the name of the file so that the dot PNG goes away. They change it to a no media type, which if you can root the device, get to that file, you take the file and then you just change it back to dot PNG. And you got the files back. You know, they don't actually do what they claim they did. It was a workaround. Yeah, it was clever and it was quick, but it was clever and quick. Whereas with Facebook, man, Google and companies like that, they don't do quick fixes like that. They really, you know, if there's something wrong, there was an engineering decision behind it. If there's something you disagree with, there's like, well, that data's still there. Well, they said that, yeah, it's still there because we want it to still be there, you know. Whereas with the Instagram guys, it was just sort of a it's too hard to go into the trash collection on this. It's easier just to change the name of the file. And then they weren't clear about that. They weren't transparent about that. And I think it's because they just didn't care. And my gut, just what I've seen over the course, is that they're not the types of guys that develop really, really powerful pieces of technology and got really lucky with one of their apps. They're the kind of guys that, you know, that got really lucky in the way that, you know, they came up with a clever, unique idea. And I don't know if they can do that again. And if they can come up with another clever, unique idea, it's going to be somebody else's engineering prowess that's really going to take it to the next level, which puts them in a terrible position. Because now all of a sudden, if somebody else can figure out what they're going to do next, you know, kind of, you know, just see the future a little bit, whether that be people at Google, people at Facebook, people at Apple, people anywhere, you know, or some competitor, and they can do it better, faster, you know, stronger. Oh man, that could be a real disaster for them.
Well, and I don't know. There's a part of that that's like, you know, obviously Facebook tried to do it with Poke and it didn't go anywhere. And so the question is really what has caused them to grow massively large and what is attractive to the younger generation for it, you know, and then, you know, and is that something where they've, you know, that others can copy the spirit of what it is that they've done? Or,
well,
you know,
I guess what I should say
they
is
they created something that's pretty unique and, you know, going to be hard to copy.
This is what I'll say.
And I like where you're headed with that too, right? Like, okay, did they land on something, they got lucky with a good idea, or are they genuinely people who, you know, have been always doing cool stuff, and, you know, I don't know.
This is what I mean. Facebook originally was a profile page. That was their product, your profile page. That's what was the compelling part about it. Nowadays, how often do you click on somebody's profile page?
All the time. Never.
Yeah, exactly. Facebook has evolved massively. Their product has changed, and it changes every year as they come up with new search things and new sharing things and, you know, and the news feed and this and that and blah, 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 blah. You know, everything that they come up with and how they deliver information. And now they are like, they do pictures. That's like their big thing right now, obviously, as we talk about all this. But the point is that what they did was this original cool product, which was a really clean profile page, evolved into something else, because the kind of guy that Zuckerberg is the kind of guy that said, hey, I can see where this is going next. I can, partly because I've got good ideas and partly because I can just see what other people are trying to do, but I can do it better, faster, and in a way that people will like it more and integrate it with what I've already done. And so as the Facebook service grew and evolved and became something bigger and entirely different, their old products really stopped mattering as much. Even and really and truly, if you think about it, the profile page is only one small part of how they build demographic information for selling you to their, you know, advertisers, partners. So it's like, you know, what used to be the foundation of the of their product is just a small part of it now. And the question that I, and that's because that part of it was a fad. The whole idea of the profile page, yeah, it's kind of fundamental, but it's not entirely necessarily. Obviously, Snapchat doesn't need it, so it's not a prerequisite to a strong social network. It is, by definition, in my opinion, a fad. And Facebook grew beyond that and has figured out how to keep that with them and incorporate that and move along with that and keep that fad relevant in a way that's, you know, unique and powerful, and that proves to me in a lot of ways that Facebook has a much longer lifespan than MySpace ever could. And which is why they passed MySpace, which is why they continue to do well and they continue to be worth stuff, and they can throw around $3 billion like it's fun money. Snapchat, on the other hand, I don't necessarily see any evidence that the next product that they come up with is going to be this great, cool thing. And the biggest problem is that they, I think, have a sense that their service is that core service of sharing pictures like that is a fad. And you can tell it with their it's not timeline. What is that service that they just came out with a couple weeks ago that nobody uses?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Exactly. Nobody even knows what it's called. Is it Storyboard?
Yeah, story, right.
Story, something like whatever. The point is, nobody uses it. Nobody even knows what it is. Am I saying that it's impossible that they'll, you know, come up with the next big thing and they'll keep coming up with the next big thing? Absolutely not. As they become worth more money, they're going to attract smarter and smarter people. You're going to get some real big heavyweights in there that are going to tell them, hey, we can turn this into a full-blown competitive product that will make Twitter and Facebook, you know, pale in comparison. And they're going to come in with great ideas. And if they listen to those people, there's real strong potential there. But if who the you know, two founders are in and of themselves, you know, I'm not super optimistic. I'm not super optimistic at all, you know, and because it's like, it is a toy amongst toys, you know, and it's like, you know, whereas with Facebook, I don't know, like, yeah, I use it for a lot of fun, but there's a certain amount of chronology and just like keeping track of information that I actively do with it. There's a certain part of my, I use it as a tool, you know, I use it as a tool to some degree. And, you know, I think, you know, it serves in the, Facebook serves as a foundational tool in a lot of ways in like, in how you connect to different services.
Yeah, the term I would use is utility. But
yeah, thank you. It is the right term. You know, it's more of there are huge utility aspects to Facebook, whereas there is no utility to Snapchat. That's part of its selling feature, is that there's no utility to it, is that it's just pointless. You know, people share pictures of their cat with me. It's stupid. You know, and
what about their dog? Do you like the dog pictures, or are those annoying too?
I didn't mention dogs. I like the cat pictures. The cat pictures. I enjoy the dog pictures. I enjoy all the pictures. But there's just no utility in it. There's no more utility in pictures of Vinny than pictures of Tiger Lily. And you know, so what are they supposed to do? You know, and I don't know.
Give you joy.
Yeah.
Add joy to your life.
Yes. Delight their customers.
Yeah, that's what I do.
So.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. If I had to guess, they'll sell eventually, and they will probably form some sort of success. They've got to figure out how to get in with the older generation. Otherwise, you know, the teens are too fickle, man. They're going to move on. That's why Facebook's around. They figured out how to transition to the older generation, where they tend to move slower and they don't jump services nearly as fast.
Yeah.
So, you know, because that would be interesting to see, of those 350 million photos being uploaded to Facebook, what's the average age, or what's the age distribution of those uploaders, which they know. And, yeah, that would just be interesting.
Yeah.
Because my guess is it's not young.
Yeah. Okay. We got to start moving faster. Because we've got a lot of stories left.
That's impossible for us, but okay.
I know.
We've almost hit all of mine. I've got good stuff.
I know. I'm gonna compress two together, three together, because I think it all ties in together.
All right. Make it happen.
So, new information came out this week. Product share. How much Apple is spending on capital investments, and they bought a company this morning. So product share numbers, first off, Android is doing pretty well. They've got about 80% market share. Apple's
got,
sub 20s. They're like, I think it was like 13%, which
they just
is
want one. So it's not what? Good. They just want one. So
it's true. They, you know, that's not true. They actually wanted more than one. They just wanted one in the first year.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying. That's pretty.
It's pretty dominant.
Yeah. That's a.
I bet you Microsoft loves it.
Yeah. So that's one big piece of news here is that that Microsoft is actually moving forward. They're having pretty good growth in their Nokia phone services. Yeah, they're the biggest growers by percentage, which is not that impressive because they were tiny. So it's easy for them to, you know. Leaps and bounds, but that's good news. That's great news. When you just bought a company, you want the company's product to be selling better than it was every quarter, you know. And they're making it's not small movements either. They're making, you know, big moves. Obviously, Android, it's hard for them to keep moving, but Apple is doing not as good, but. You know, as the news source Mac Daily News will always point out, that the vast majority of Android phones that are being sold are incredibly cheap phones, or they're sold on on discount. And from a profit share perspective, Samsung's got to sell a gazillion phones compared to Apple to make even close to the same, you know, profit margins, and they're not. Apple's taking home a ton of money. Samsung's doing pretty well though. They're not hurting.
They're
but it's really growth in your China and India markets that are really helping out the Android install base, which is not actually helping out Google that much. Because as we've talked about a million times on this show, China doesn't allow any Google services in China in their country. So all the ways that Apple or Google would make money, they're not. But you know, it is what it is.
It just continues to be one of those things where I wonder what their executive meetings are like, where they're just like, yeah, 80% share, high five. Just like, man. We really missed an opportunity there.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about in the past, where they really felt like they had to give it away in order to get that. And now that it's that successful, they've just got to be going like, oh, man, we just gave it away. That was another $1 billion business, and we just gave it away. Man, all right, cool, whatever.
Well,
you know, I just wonder what they do behind closed doors, because I would be kind of like, well, I don't know how else you could have done it in order to make it happen. And obviously their whole thing of trying to make the Google Play app and stuff more integrated, you know, that backdoor stuff that you were talking about last week, 2 weeks ago,
It
was kind of their way of trying to figure it out. But you know, and I'll piggyback on this with a couple of the articles with the new Moto G that Motorola's come out with, which is owned by Google, you know, for $179, which is actually it sounds like a decent phone. It's similar to the Moto X, but, you know, downgraded specs. But they're like, no, it's made for, that's $179 off contract, by the way.
Oh, wow.
That's the price. Yeah, which like, wow, that's actually wow. really reasonable.
Yeah, that's actually really reasonable.
Yeah, and they're like, and it's not a bad phone. It'll be able to run the latest version of Android. You know, it's got a pretty good screen, pretty good battery life. You know, obviously it's not top of the line, but they're like, that's not what it's designed for. You know, so they do own Motorola, and from what I understand, the Motorola G should, if they can communicate it well, should sell very well. But that's kind of like that's how we make money. That's it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Nexus is getting is making a lot of noise. You know, it's not like it's, you know, but yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting place to be. It is
just,
so much,
you know,
more
you can imagine if Apple had 80% market share, a la like the iPod market, they'd be hand over fist in cash. Google wouldn't even know what to do with all of it. You know, they'd be like, ah, let's take on some more Google X projects. We've got, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They wouldn't be a, whatever they are right now, a $15 billion company. They would be a $50 billion company. They'd be bigger than Apple.
Oh, yeah, without question.
And if they just done like the Microsoft thing, right? I just want $50 a phone or $100 a phone or whatever.
Wouldn't it take much? And I guess, I don't know. I wonder with this. I wonder, because it's like you got, you know, where does it go from here? That's my big question, because it's like on one problem is, you know, on one hand, they're at the numbers of, you know, everybody said that the, you know, that the small, the everybody, like, you know, or one of the big predictions was that the cell phone market would go the way of the personal computer market, which was exactly what's going on. That, you know, Microsoft got 90% of computers out there. Apple had less than 10, but they had 90% of all computer sales over $1,000 or whatever it was. You know, they were the high end machines. They nailed that market. You know, and they're making tons of profit, and it was good for them. And you're seeing a similar move here, you know, where Android's got a gigantic piece of the market. But what's weird is it's like, you know, in your countries where people buy apps, where people buy music, you know, your Europe's, your UK's, your America's, Apple has a huge, you know, has a much more comparable market share to Android. And, you know, in America, the numbers seem to be shifting back the other way, where Android's starting, or, you know, Apple's starting.
Yeah, but that's because Apple's got a new phone out, and, you know, give it 6 months and they'll be losing again.
Well, but I mean, you know, I guess my point is, it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, it's just, it's not the same. That's the thing, is it's just not the same. And because Microsoft was making money on every sale of every device, and Android doesn't. And it's like, what are developers doing? You know, they talk about developers, you know, one of the big reasons why Microsoft was so dominant was because developers made so much more money developing for Windows. It was just, guys who developed for OS X did it because it was fun, not because they made money on it, because they could. Whereas today it's like, you know, the best numbers say it's a break-even proposition, but it's way easier to develop, you know, for iOS. And your big startups, your Snapchats, your Instagrams, they all start on iOS, you know, which gives it a certain market share or mind share, you know, that is well beyond its reach. So I don't know. I shrug my shoulders in all this. I'm just like, it's complicated. It's really complicated. And maybe it was that complicated back in the day with you know, Windows versus OS X, and early on, you know, PCs versus Macs. And I just wasn't paying close enough attention to really see how complicated the story was, where people were making money. But to me, this is just like, it is, you know, that number, that 80% versus the 90, you know, versus Apple's 15% is disingenuous, really and truly, because it just doesn't, for some companies, that's great news. Samsung and especially, I can't remember the name of the two companies in China that do most of the manufacturing for China. That is fantastic news, because they're making money on every piece of hardware. But for Google, it's good news. Yeah, but it's not like crazy amazing news. And
they totally take it. They're excited about it. They're just also like, man, we left money on the table. They just didn't. Yeah. They just missed opportunity. I don't know. Had they taken advantage of the opportunity, it may never have been that big, for all I know.
Right. And then there's the whole thing of, you can't count Microsoft out. You know, as much as I complain about Microsoft all the time on the show.
Dude, they're done. They're done. And I'll tell you exactly why. Because they're in the midst of a CEO transition, and that sets them back at least 1 year, probably 2 years. And plus, they're doing an acquisition of Nokia, which is going to set them back yet another year. And, you know, in the span of 3 years, they're done.
See, what I'm hoping for, and I realize that maybe I'm wrong, is that the really, really smart people at Microsoft, because there are really, really smart people at Microsoft, get a little bit of independence and get a little bit crazy, you know, and get a little bit of the pirate spirit, as it were, and just sort of like, no, we're going to build cool products.
That's not their culture, though.
I know, but I'm hoping, my fingers are crossed, you know, because the Nokia hardware is great. It's, you know, it's honestly nothing that's coming out of Android is in the same ballpark as Nokia. And depending on what you're looking for, you know, there's good reason to go with Nokia over Apple. I think Apple is in a class.
Nice.
What? Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. The cameras are fantastic. The touch
screen. I can zoom. Whoa.
I know. Yeah, and there are things that they're doing that would make it a compelling piece of hardware, as compelling of a piece of hardware as an iPhone. And you know, I don't know. Where Apple does music really well, Nokia does cameras. So I don't know. I'm not totally. I'm cautiously optimistic. Microsoft almost never delivers on my optimism for them. So maybe I shouldn't be, but you know, we'll see. We'll see. There's potential there. But what's really interesting about this is that Apple is positioning themselves to kind of at least lock into this position that they are. Over the last year, they spent $10.5 billion on capital investments, which is a lot of money. And basically, what they've been buying is like just straight up manufacturing equipment, like super high end laser stuff and new tooling for building, you know, for machining aluminum and you know, stuff that went into building the Mac Pro line and things specific for, like, you know, how to do, you know, it's like all that glass that we talked about last month, the sapphire glass. That was all capital investments that went into building better glass. They dropped a bunch of money into TSMC so that TSMC can build better chips for them. You know, they're spending some big money, and they tend to be spending it in places and areas where it's like nobody's even thinking about getting into this stuff. You know, and this is so Tim Cook, where, you know, it's just like it's all supply chain management stuff. It's the engineers have said, hey, we want to build something really cool. You know, we want to build something out of sapphire. We think that's the next best thing. And Tim Cook went, okay, I'll do it. I will make that happen. And where nobody else in the world is even trying to make that sort of stuff happen, Tim Cook has just got like a gigantic bank account and is like, I need this to, I just need you to be able to produce this much, okay? Like,
I hope that he's not investing $10.5 billion into a buggy whip. You know, that's just my hope. That's just my hope. He's also looking forward and saying, okay, what's the next thing? Let's optimize this thing, you know, let's optimize the phone as crazy, and we'll make it amazing and awesome and better than any other phone out there. Well, in the meantime, there's something else coming along that just totally disrupts it, and you know, which it may not be for another 10-20 years, similar to the the computers, but you know, desktop, laptop type stuff, because they're all computers. But, you know, he's got the supply chain thing down, and he's great at it. And, you know, you look at the stuff they're doing, and you're just like, whoa, that's awesome. I just hope he's not missing the other piece of the equation.
Yeah, that is the big concern. Because it's like, You know, the thing is that they're going to continue to be, you know, the hardware leaders in hardware technology leadership, which to me, you know, as a mechanical engineer, I love that stuff. I think it's awesome. I think it's super cool. It gets me excited, but it doesn't necessarily move phones. You know, and from an industrial design perspective, it's really important. But is it the only thing that's important? Hardly. And, you know, yeah, that's a big question. I don't know. What is cool, though, like I said a couple minutes ago, they did buy something today. They dropped a couple of coins on a company called Prime Sense. Prime Sense is an Israeli company. And they...
I thought it was an Autobot.
Yeah. they develop 3D sensing technology, and not just any 3D sensing technology, but some of the 3D sensing technology that went into the Kinect. You point a camera or two at a room, and when as you determine,
work as well as you want. Got it.
Exactly. You know what? It does actually work really well. It's just Microsoft's implementation of it in their stupid games that they come up with.
You know, that would be the one thing that would stop me from getting an Xbox One. Man, you got to stand far away from that camera to make it work.
Oh, really?
I don't think my living room is big enough. Huh. Yeah, it's like you got to be minimum of 10 feet. I mean, which I don't know, maybe if people got big living rooms, then it's not a big deal. But I'd be like, I'll be standing on the couch, man.
That's funny. Nobody knows what they're going to do with it. Nobody knows why they bought it. But they spent a third of $1 billion on it, so I'm sure it's not a I think some people might argue that it, you know, maybe Apple is building a TV set.
Yeah.
I hate rumors like that because it's like, well, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, obviously they're building a TV set.
Don't buy
a
television. Just wait.
Yeah, just wait. It'll come. The refresh is coming. Yeah, I'm so glad that they didn't refresh the Mac Minis. Like, every month that goes by that they don't refresh the Mac Mini, I'm like, yes, yes.
Every time they make an announcement, you start sweating bullets.
Yeah, seriously. Which is
That's
so
why,
stupid.
Dude, I could buy an iPad in January, and it would be okay.
Exactly. It's such a stupid way to look at it, because it's like, it wouldn't make, you know, what was I supposed to do? I couldn't wait for it. And it wasn't like, you know, it's not like them not announcing a new one doesn't make mine a year and a half old. It's still a year and a half old. Like, it doesn't give me anything. That's my own psychology that I think is, you know, part of what makes
it. So, if you don't think it's for a television, what do you think they bought Prime Sense for?
I think it's for a television. I just hate that rumor because it's...
Got it.
It's, you know... Or I should say at least it's partly for a television. I hope they're doing something cool with the phones. You know, as much as we, like, make fun of... Well, did we make fun of the eye gesture stuff with the Samsung Galaxy? I can't remember if we made fun of it because...
I don't know.
It's one of those things where if Apple were to do it, I'd think it was the coolest thing. Oh, my... It's finally, it's here. Done right. You know, I try not to be a fanboy, but
I've got a friend who got the Samsung Galaxy S4, and he said that the eye tracking thing is like, it's cool, it works. He said the tilt to scroll and stuff. He goes, that's horrible.
Oh yeah,
I turned that off. He goes, I can't. It doesn't work. He goes, well, it works. It's just way too sensitive. And he's like, nope, done. Which another friend, actually, he was using Android for a while, and he said it's a pretty good operating system. It's like, he can go either way.
Yeah, I've talked about this before. I don't have any particular problem with Android. I don't think it works for me for two reasons. Number one, their sound, their music management, their sound drivers, their hardware, it's not as good. Anybody you talk to... and that's important to me. And the other reason is, it's really good that I don't have root access to my phone. I was out last night with a friend of mine, Keegan Black, one of the speaking of former guest hosts. And he just got the Nexus 5. It's a cool phone, man. That is a cool phone. I do want one really bad. I'd carry both.
Yeah.
But we were talking about it, and he was – and he was showing me all the different stuff and, like, how he was, like, he could switch, like, he could go into the terminal – he had, like, a terminal command program. So he could, like, just go, like, go straight into the Unix kernel and was, like, you know, and he was showing me, like, this is the Delvik engine running Android. This is the new Air engine, I think is what they called it. But they – you know, it's, like, he's, like, showing all the different stuff. And I was, like, my phone would never work right. Ever. I wouldn't be able to make phone calls. I would constantly be tinkering and breaking stuff. And or I wouldn't be, and it would just be no point. It'd be completely stock, and I'd never play with it. And what's the difference then? Yeah, exactly. And what's the advantage of having an Android phone then? Nothing. It's just an Android phone. It's essentially the same. It's got basically the same, you know, main apps and it makes phones calls. The only thing is that it doesn't play music as well. So yeah, I really, you know, I'm a hard sell. But it's a cool, you know, it's a fine operating system. There's nothing. If you're into it, go for it. I won't think any less of you. I'll think you're poor, but that's, you know. No, Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what they do with it.
Okay. So, I saw this product. It's called Automatic, and essentially it's a device that plugs in to your OBD2 port on your car, you know, that little port underneath your brake pedal.
Yeah.
And you can plug a system into it, it'll tell you what's wrong with whatever's, you know, why is your light flashing and stuff. There's this app that you just kind of put it in there permanently, and what it does is it connects, care to guess, via Bluetooth to your iPhone, and just kind of gives you information about your driving habits, and you know, obviously if your check engine light turns on, it will let you know exactly what that is, so there's no guessing about it. Other things that it does is it will observe your driving style. And it'll give you subtle audio cues when you do things that waste gas, like hard braking, rapid acceleration, or speeding over 70 miles per hour. So you're like, oh, I shouldn't do that, which is kind of cool. It'll also tell you, what is it? It'll show you, you know, distance and miles per gallon, that kind of stuff. Another interesting one is if you parked and couldn't remember where your car is, you could just open the app and it'll be like, oh, it's right here.
Here you go. Nice. That's kind of cool.
So you can find it. Yeah, yeah. If you're in a severe crash, it can detect that and electronically notify authorities, which is cool. There's a little asterisk there, which means you probably got to pay for it or something like that. And, you know, it works with any car that's got one of those. But what do you think about products like that? I know a lot of insurance companies are starting to roll out that kind of stuff too, where they're, oh yeah, we'll help you, you know, because their whole idea is, you know, the more you know about your driving habits, the safer you'll be, and they're willing to pass at least some of the savings on to you.
James, do you remember a conversation that you and I had? I remember it very distinctly. I was walking around the parking lot of the Moss Landing Cement Company, which is back in the day when I worked in Moss Landing for Calera Corporation. And we were talking about the iPhone and what comes next, you know, classic conversation. And I said, you know what we should build? We should build a little plug that plugs into your phone, connects, I think Wi-Fi is what I suggested at the time. I might have said Bluetooth if I had been thinking forward.
Did I tell you that was a dumb idea?
No. We decided that was a cool idea, but we weren't sure we could do it, and we weren't sure how well it would sell. And now it's for sale. This product. This is exactly what I wanted to build. I'm glad somebody did to make money off of it. And you know what I especially like about it. And this is how I'm going to fall asleep tonight, because otherwise I wouldn't be able to.
You're welcome.
is I'm telling myself, this is a good idea. I come up with good ideas long before anybody else, like, implements the idea. Maybe I wasn't the first, but I knew it, and I knew it long enough where I had time to develop a product like this. I could have done that. I saw it early enough. I have the kind of brain that can see this coming. What's going to keep me up at night is the fact that I didn't implement it. And that stresses me out. It's cool. It's great. I'm actually going to look into
$100
this.
$100 bucks.
And think about, because honestly, I'll be totally honest. My first, I've been working on app development stuff, right? I'm trying to learn how to write an app. And the first app I want to write is a better gas tracking app. Number one, anything out there costs money.
Well, that idea sounds really familiar. Where did I have that? Oh, yeah, I had that idea.
Well, yeah, and it's just one of those things where it's like, the problem is that they have gas tracking apps, but they cost money, and I don't want to pay money, and I don't want anybody to pay money. I just want a good one that works, and I don't even need to charge. I want it for myself. And what?
You're a better man than I.
Yeah. Well,
mine was a web app. I never went as far as making it into an actual app.
I'll put a little iAds thing on it, and just make whatever a couple pennies off of it I can that way. But I sit there and I go, I was like, is that what is that?
That's mine.
How much did it cost you?
I made it myself.
Oh, cool.
It's just web based.
Oh, I see.
It's not an app.
I got you. Maybe we should integrate our services. Do you have an API?
Oh yeah, totally.
And we might have to talk about that offline.
Okay.
It's funny. I said that as like one of those really like jivey business terms. We'll talk about it offline, not realizing that. No, actually, we're online. We should probably talk about it offline. But but anyways, I was thinking, man, it would be really cool to have something like this. It re-harkened ideas about – I was like, I'm so surprised that nobody's built one of these things where it just plugs in and lives there with Bluetooth or whatever, and connects to your phone and gives you data. There's just so much data in your phone or in your car, and it'd be so cool to be able to integrate it and just do it all live right there. And it's well-trodden technology. This isn't like it's, super like, you're not reinventing the wheel, as it were. You're just taking the data that's there and connecting it via Bluetooth and then building a decent interface. That's all you would be doing, and you incorporate a couple other cool pieces of information. Wham, bam, you got a cool product going. This is awesome. I want one. I'm actually going to think about buying one. I'll look into it, see if it's
for $99.95. You could put one in your Civic.
I know, and I would because it's cool. But I just sit there and I go like, it hurts my soul that I didn't do it, because it's just like. I'm going to England for Thanksgiving. I could be doing this instead.
Got it. I'm with you.
I understand. Just twists and turns of life.
So you love the idea. Good to know.
I do. Yeah. Yep. Okay. Enough of me fretting. Talking about new hardware, guess what? New RAM standards coming out. That's pretty exciting. DDR4, Dance Dance Revolution 4. So right now all of your computers have what's called DDR3, the last generation. Super lame. One of the big differences. So this is going to require like new motherboards, new hardware. So this don't go out and buy DDR RAM, DDR4 RAM, thinking that cool, I'll just get more RAM and more speed. But it does have some pretty cool upgrades. Number one, it's dramatically faster bus speed. So they claim it's like 100% increase in speed over DDR3, which is pretty cool. So it's like 2 times faster. It's way more efficient, up to 20% less power, which is great news for
awesome
your
news.
Yeah, for your computers out there, which is probably something that Apple's going to be all about. Of course, they solder all your RAM to the board now, so that might not be a big deal for them. But, you know, open standards are always good. It does, you know, incremental improvements forward. But the big one that everybody's, like, super stoked about is that they changed one of the requirements, whereas before with DDR3, each module had a minimum requirement of 1 gig of RAM on each module. So if you had an 8 gig stick, you could have like a 4 gig stick, which would have 4 modules, 1 gig per each. Whereas this one's, they have a 4 gigabyte, limit for modules. You know, low bar. So basically what this thing is it's like, this is like superpowering the amount of RAM that you're going to be able to get in there. It's like the minimum RAM is 4 times bigger. So the maximum RAM starts going up, you know, a lot, which is cool. So what's fun about this is that, you know, as this sort of like comes into the market over the next 2-3 years, this is what's going to allow us to move from 16 gigs being your kind of, your powerful computers. You know, you got a good computer, you got 16 gigs. Nice job. We're going to, like, this is what's going to start pushing us into the 32 and 64 gig ballpark, which is pretty exciting. Because, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Very fun.
Faster's better.
Yeah, pretty much. Bigger programs. Yay. Well, the weird part about it now is that, like, all the apps that or all the applications that you build are, like, so many people want to build something that's, you know, scalable across multiple platforms. So it's like we're lightening up all of our desktop apps that can take advantage of all this RAM in order to, you know, in order to make them compatible with your smartphone. And that's the irony of it. But it's cool. It's very cool. I'm excited. I like it. I like it. Makes me excited. Let's see here. What else haven't we talked about?
MIT built.
Oh yeah.
Something.
So this is pretty cool. I recommend going to furloughbros.com and checking out the video. Basically, what MIT did is they built a 3D display. You know what it is? Essentially, it's this table that has these little pegs, these square pegs, pixels. And they're like a quarter inch on a side, so they're kind of big. But what they can do is they have them connected to actuators, so they can move the pegs up and down, you know, and scale up and down, so they can kind of move things. And so what it does is this surface is comprised of a tiles that are quarter inch on a side, a large panel of them, and they can all move and stuff and fluctuate. And so it's like what they can do is they show this video of him, of this dude. He's got his hands under a Kinect, which is getting a 3D version of his hands, and then the table is raising the pins to simulate his hands, and then they put a ball on the table between his hands, and he can like knock the ball back and forth with his hands. With the simulated hands, it's freaky, but it's really cool. And then they have a projector on top, so it's like showing his hands kind of on top of it. But they're showing stuff like they have one where it's like a camera that if you got your phone sitting on it and it. You know, your phone's connected to it. So your phone starts to go off. Well, nowadays, your phone vibrates. Well, this one they're showing, it like picks the phone up and then drops it, and then a shockwave comes out around the phone. And then it starts to walk your phone around the table, like just moving it, like so that you realize that it's like, hey, your phone's going off. Your phone's going off. Your phone's just cool. Basically being obnoxious. And it's really cool looking though. I'm like, oh man, I want one so bad. they've got like stuff where like they've got different program things where like they have like a wave come and move a ball, and then they move it around on a course and stuff. It's really cool. It's a unique little project that they're building. And seems to work really well. And, you know, it's very much conceptual technology. It's like, what can we do with this? How are we going to move forward? You'll never see something like this as a mainstream project, but it's just sort of starting to think about, you know, the future of, you know, haptic feedback and 3D animations like that and stuff. Oh, it's cool. It's very cool. It's fun.
Yeah, that is cool. I wish I went to MIT. They do all sorts of really fun things.
I have to be a lot smarter than I am.
Of course, I'd still be in the business department and still wouldn't have any fun with it anyways.
Yeah, that's true. But,
man, that's cool. It's weird.
Yeah.
Just to kind of watch it. Yeah, we'll post the video. People can check it out. Very neat. Hey, just wanted to say thanks to the people who are posting comments on YouTube/Google+, because we know you didn't have a choice. Because Google has, you know, made all their comments are now Google+ comments. Apparently, they got a little bit of a backlash over that one. So far, the petition has hit 112,000 users who are not happy about it.
Yeah.
So Google's going to be like, ah, we'll figure it out, you know. So that happened. Oh, Google. People don't like it when you force systems upon them. Like, what was that, Google Buzz, I believe?
Yeah.
Was the situation where they forced it upon them, and people are like, no, don't do that. And they did it again. So we'll see how this works out.
That's funny. I've this is an interesting one because I've read a lot of people that are kind of in my camp of, like, you know, just sort of grim acceptance of the fact that Google Plus is a way of life. You know, embrace it because, you know, I don't go to Google for anonymity anymore. If I want to make comments that I'd rather people not know about, I go to Reddit. I go to other services, you know, and
Snapchat.
Yes, exactly. You know, and even in those cases, I assume that everybody knows, you know, like that anybody who really wants to find out can, you know, girlfriend or, you know, potential girlfriends that are stalking me can't, but that's about the extent of, of my anonymity on the internet. And so I don't know, I've just kind of accepted that is a truism, and Google Plus, all it does is strip that fake identity. But I've always used Captain Furlough. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. You know what? It's too late. I've always used Captain Furlough as my online identity for everything, you know, and
not on Instagram.
Yeah, not on Instagram. That's because that's my other one, next 3 to 4. Oh, I've got two. And there goes my Reddit anonymity. Take a wild guess which one it is. But, you know, what was I going to say? For me, the anonymity thing, like, it just doesn't matter. Whatever. It is what it is. And we use Google Plus. We use Google Hangout. I use Google Plus. I have a couple of pictures on there. I use it for backing up some images that I don't put on Facebook and I don't put on Dropbox. And, you know, there are purposes to it. And I use a lot of Google services. And it's kind of cool that they all work together pretty seamlessly now, you know, from Gmail to contacts and everything. So, okay. All right. Now YouTube is in on the party too. That's fine by me. But where I share a little bit of angst with people is some of the features that they've added to, or that they've changed to YouTube during this whole upgrade, really broke YouTube. One of the primary complaints I've been seeing is, like, related videos. It was like, it used to be like you'd have like one or two videos that you'd seen before, but they'd really try to help you discover new material, and it doesn't work like that anymore. It's just, there's just related, you know, and part of it is just because of, like, and I think it's part of it has to do with how they're merging the different accounts together and, like, where your information's going and what they're keeping track of. But it's just, like, related information. Everybody's complaining about the fact that, like, okay, I've seen every single one of these videos before. so you want to give me some new stuff? And which I actually almost never use YouTube. Part of my problem is I almost never use YouTube on the computer anymore. And it just sort of how my life is, you know, the nature of how I use computers. Actually, you know what it is? It's the Mac Mini. Because now I don't like have my computer with me anywhere. I use my iPad, I use my iPhone way more, so I use the app all the time. So a lot of these changes I didn't even notice at first, because I'm just how does this affect me? but I have noticed the whole, like, okay, so related videos. I know that there's more than 10 videos for this particular search, but you don't have them. you're not showing me them, so that's kind of frustrating. But also just the stupid stuff. It's like people are complaining about the fact that, like, when in the comment section, it used to be that if somebody linked to a particular moment in the video. Let's say they're like, wow, you know, you're watching a skateboarding jump, and they're like, wow, did you see that one jump at 49 seconds? It was amazing. Well, you could put a link there for the video at 49 seconds, and when you clicked on it, the video would start playing at 49 seconds. There'd be no reloading. It was all handled with Ajax and server-side JavaScript, and it would just work. And they broke that. Now it refreshes the entire screen, and which technically it does the same thing, but it does it worse, and that's annoying, especially since now it has to reload the video. But that also goes to their whole thing of, like, have you noticed the fact that in YouTube it, like, will buffer the video, and then if you rewind more than 10 seconds, it rebuffers the video? Once again, why did you break that, Google? Like, what was the advantage of that? Why doesn't that work anymore? And it's just, there's a lot of things that they're aggressively working on technology and changing stuff. But, you know, and then everybody always complains about the quintessential, the video doesn't work right, but the ads do every time. Thanks, Google. You know, and it's like, which you sit there and you go, you're the product, not YouTube. So, yeah, that's the point. But at the same time, it's frustrating because they are the dominant player. There's basically no other alternatives that compare compare performance-wise. And so they've allowed things to get rather degraded because
it's the nature of monopoly, man. That's how that works.
They're still the winners. Anybody that you know can come along.
Talk to Microsoft about that.
Right. You know, and so they're, you know, and they're now tuning. They are now tuning YouTube to maximize profits, not maximize, you know, users' delight, which is totally their right to do with the service, and it's still the best service on the internet for what they're trying to do. But you know, you give something away for free, and people, you know, come to feel like it's, you know, it's their right to have it. And I find it a little bit crazy. This whole thing, okay, build a better system. You know, or use a different, you know, it's not the only video streaming site out there. Use something else. Like, if you really don't like it that much, go somewhere else. The problem is it's still the best.
Well, it's not even necessarily it's the best. That's where all their subscribers are. They don't, you know, but, wow, man, that's funny. I actually thought that was just going to be like a throwaway one-liner final article thing, and you blew up.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it a lot lately because it's just one of those things where, like, it's not.
Which I didn't at all. I was like, whatever.
Right. Well, it's what drives me, and I think that's why is because it's like, to me, this is generally just this is a non-story. Dudes, chill out. Google breaks stuff and then they fix it, They're integrating Google Plus. Just accept that as part of your life with Google and move on. Like, what do you want them to do? Like, not, oh, no, they're trying to maximize how much money they make off of this service that they give away for free. Yeah, yeah, that's the point. Did you not see this coming? And so it just drives me, it blows my mind when people, like, get so bent out of shape that their free service isn't working perfectly anymore. Yeah, it's free. And it's still the best thing on the internet. So, what are you even talking about? Whatever. Drives me nuts. I didn't sign the petition. Google, I still like you.
All right. Okay. Wow. You fired up, man. Which I think makes for the appropriate send-off there. Oh, that'll work. So, everybody, thank you for joining us. My name is James Furlo. My brother, who is on fire, it's not catching. He's on fire. Fired up. Love it. That guy is Matthew Furlo. So we will talk next time. Thank you.